Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers. It's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's 2024. Let's do this. Here's the credits, of course. Mike Rickberg sang that song at the beginning, and he wrote that song, and he sang it with Sarah Cohen, his wife. And he will sing the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Also, Patrick Brady, still putting this together. Video, audio, all of it. He's amazing. So, and Vilmos doing JackieCationStore.com. Squarespace is doing the regular Jackie Cation page, and I'm thinking of moving the Dork Forest and DorkForest.com away from WordPress because it's driving me nuts. But those are the credits. But if you go to JackieCation.com, you can get Dork Forest merch. You can get my stand-up merch. You can get my stand-up CDs and DVDs, which you'd have to have devices for those. You can also see videos and find out any number of things. I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 18th year, we're doing it, you guys. You can go to my Bandcamp or my YouTube for extra content. Please donate, is what I'm saying. It's 2024, and I think we've been in this long enough. Why don't you guys, everybody send me $100? That's what I'd like you to do. You can PayPal me. There's links all over the pages. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. You can find me at a stand-up show and hand me a sweaty wad of 20s. Do something. But I love doing the show. I would love to make some money, is what I'd like to do. In other news, I'm sure there's more things that I should talk about, but I can't think of them. But let's listen to who's going to dork out about something, because that's my favorite part. Thanks for listening, you guys. You're all great. Let's get into the show.
What? It's Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, in my garage. And again, it's Thursday, so you're going to hear those garbage trucks behind me. Look forward to it. It feels like more early morning radio. It's Jackie Cation and the weasel. The weasel's sick today. Today we have with me, stand-up comedy comic Naomi Fitter, F-I-T-T-E-R, Naomi Fitter. That's right. She's doing a show at The Crow upcoming. But if you go to Naughty But Nerdy, her Instagram feed, you will know more. You will know more. And then maybe you could go to that show. If you're anywhere near Santa Monica, which when I moved to Los Angeles, I always used to make the joke that it was Santa Sister Monica. That's who it was named after. Can you hear the garbage trucks yet?
Yeah, I hear my man. Oh,
son of a bitch.
Makes me feel at home.
That's it. Congratulations. I live in Van Nuys. You have a nice view of California behind you. That's actually quite nice.
Oregon, California. I'm in Corvallis, Oregon, despite my scenic backdrop. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And are you going to be at The Crow, though, for sure, in Santa Monica?
I will. Yeah, I'll be in town for a conference then. I just thought it might be more chic, more, yeah.
Oh, it's glamorous. Chic. It's Hollywood. It's not. It's Santa Monica, which is actually more expensive. Naomi Fitter, your dorkdom is interesting to me. Robots? What's happening? Is it robots in general? I forgot to ask you more questions. So this, we look forward to us discovering together what I think you're going to talk about.
This is great. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't study too much up. I should have been more specific too. I'm a robotics professor by day and comedian by night. So I've
got... Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Thank you.
And,
I've got a couple threads. So... robotics, human-robot interaction is my special cup of tea, but I also have an autonomous robotic stand-up comedian, and I'm a human stand-up comedian. So.
Wait, so you made an autonomous robot to do stand-up next to you of some sort?
It's a standalone act, so I hold the mic up next to it, but...
You wouldn't want to interfere with their artistic journey. And then a door slams because it's windy.
Oh, man.
Everyone knows that. Everyone knows it's windy.
Windy and Van Nuys.
Windy and Van Nuys. And is it sentient? Is your robot sentient? Is it writing its own material?
No? It's not. Okay. Yeah. Since I'm also a human stand-up, I'm still kind of precious. Even with the generative AI, I'm like, I write its material. I think it's better. I'm clinging on to that as long as I can.
Right. There's no, I mean, if you were to put an AI sort of like write jokes kind of program into it. Could it right? Knock, knock. Who's there? Svananoli. They're dumb. Anyway, would it probably, I haven't fiddled with AI. All I know is that Riverside, where we're taping this very podcast, wanted, is got a new thing. And Patrick Brady said to me, opt out. They're going to use all of your episodes for AI to learn things. And I'm like, yeah, AI can learn on its own. I'm not putting AI through school. I will forgive their student loans, though, because I'm a big red ragger.
That's
anyway.
Very generous. Yeah.
Sure. No,
so far, no generative AI. I'm still writing the robot strokes myself. I do think like the current state of things would be very pun-centric. I saw some early success with like, that's what she said jokes as well, even pre the current wave of generative AI. Yeah,
are we gonna have to go through like the hacky, you know, are they gonna have to live through Milton Berle and Bob Hope and Johnny Carson, big boobs and pussy tastes like fish? And I'm like, okay, it's all very disturbing to me.
Most likely, the idea.
Yeah, I would imagine your mama,
definitely. That's a good one. The systems rely on training data, so it depends on what's out there. But if you go to like your average open mic, it definitely seems that we'll need to suffer a bit first.
Right. When I sit through an open mic, I at least know that there's human suffering behind it. So is your robot gendered?
It does have a male voice. Yeah, this is one of my ongoing gripes with myself. I made a robot with a
male
voice.
Well, you were hoping to get work. Maybe you were hoping to get work.
And it worked. Yeah, yeah. So that's always one lament that I have about the robot. Like, I've gone and replaced myself with a sort of white external appearance, male-voiced robot stand-up comedian.
Wow. You're just like, and is your robot named The Colonizer? Just speaking of hacky premises.
It's not, I guess it could be. The name is another lament, though, the second lament of the system.
Yes.
I named it John the Robot, because I needed a quick stand-in name, Silicon Valley-sounding name. And my partner's name is also John. So now when people ask, like, how's John doing? Or what's John up to?
Naomi, I'm going to let you in on something. Nobody's asking about the robot. Everyone knows that the robot is packed in a box or in a closet.
I don't know. He's getting some serious stage time. People are curious. Definitely.
You know what? It will make you very angry if that robot gets more stage time than you. What does it look like? Did you build it?
I did.
From a vacuum cleaner? What happened? How do you build a robot?
I have put it on top of a vacuum cleaner. It's a commercial robot, an Aldebaran Now robot. They were a company started up in France, got acquired by SoftBank Robotics. So you can buy it if you have like way too much cash on hand.
Right. That is some disposable. You've decided to use your disposable income to buy. Did you say Aldebaran? Because I don't mean to tell you, but that's no moon.
No.
How do you spell the name of the company?
It's Aldebaran is the original.
Aldebaran.
Yeah, exactly.
Robot.
Are you looking it up?
I am, because I'm hoping for a photo.
It's kind of infant scale, like an infant-sized humanoid robot.
Oh, it's infant-sized?
A couple feet tall.
So like toddler size? Like it's just sort of a small child?
Yeah, a little.
Does it look like that?
Awkward. Yeah, exactly. Depending on the version.
Is it blue?
The color accents
blue?
Are different. Mine has gray accents. The version 5 has orange accents. It depends on the version.
Sure. Here's a. This one's getting wacky. This one's a prop comic. Almost certain.
Yeah.
So when you teach robotics, do you teach the building of robots?
I do a little bit of everything. There's like the hardware. There's sort of circuitry and programming in robotics. I sit at the intersection, although my training is all in mechanical engineering, or almost all.
Okay. See, here's the thing about the Dork Forest. There are listeners right now who have either been to robotics camp, or their kids have, or they've gone, they work at NASA. I don't know what their jam is.
Dive in deeper.
Yeah. I got to know what do you think is robotics camp sort of where you started?
Not me. So I'm originally from Appalachia, like the southern part of Ohio. That's Appalachian.
Wow. So, congratulations for getting out. It's a look at you, an engineer.
I know.
And very proud, I bet. I bet they're very proud of you.
I don't know. They might burn me in effigy or be proud, depending on the day.
It's very beautiful, Appalachia.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So my early experiences, I was definitely nerdy. I loved physics. I loved Spanish. I didn't get to do robotics until college, and I joined the robotics team there. My claim to fame was kind of micromanaging the pizza. I was very passionate about like what
catering?
Pizza flavors. No, just Wait. Like just micromanaging what pizza order we got for our meetings, and I.
Right. So you were doing the catering, is what you're telling me.
Not the proudest. Not the proudest.
But you were okay. But so you go to college and you join the robotics team, mm-hmm. and you're studying mechanical engineering or humanities until you decide you want to study engineering. What is the robotics team? I've never had the guts to ask the Adlers.
Sure.
Anyway, the people I know. So,
nice.
What is it?
Yeah, in that case, it was kind of unmanned ground vehicle competitions, depending on the, school. If it's a team, if it's a club, you'll see all kinds of things going on in robotics. But at the time, we were still working on getting driving robots, so sort of self-driving robots. At the time, much more fresh, much more hip than it would be nowadays to drive around environments and make it to specific waypoints, avoid obstacles, that kind of thing.
Okay, so but remote control?
No, automatic. So early waves of using LIDAR.
The Mars roller? What's LIDAR?
Oh, it's like a...
Pretend I don't know. You have to know about my degree in engineering. Pretend I don't have such a thing.
Sounds good. Yeah, yeah. It shoots...
We have an hour.
Yeah, yeah. This will be my seminar. Let me pull up my slides.
Can share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It shoots light into the environment and waits for it to reflect back and uses that to construct a map of what's around it. So right now with many self-driving car companies and efforts, it hinges on LIDAR or cameras or other time of flight sensors. This was in the early wave of we want to put these types of sensors on driving vehicles and help them understand their environment based on that and make decisions.
Wow. Is that the reason why all rental cars beep when you get close to people?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Bad.
Fair enough.
We're doing a bad job.
No, I don't, it's great for me. I'm an idiot. So I don't have a lot of pride in my driving. So people always turn it off. They're like, I don't need help. I can drive. And I was like, no, please.
I need help.
Do whatever,
yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Tell me if I'm going to hit a pedestrian.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm texting someone. If you could seriously let me know that the person in front of me left, I might want to get going. Have you seen that? In the cars, they say the person in front of you has left. You might want to go.
I haven't seen that feature yet. Wow, that's amazing for busy multitaskers of the world.
Right, right. I'm busy trying to watch a movie and caption this video. So it's very important to me. So they're using light, they're using maps, they're using all these things to do. And we're talking what, 2005, 2010?
2010-ish, yeah.
Yeah.
It's should I date myself? I guess I can.
You can, but the aging process is inexorable. There's nothing to be done. Mm-hmm. Someone has a copy of your birth certificate. You've been doxed.
Oh, wow.
Look at that.
Mood lighting.
It was clouds.
For the doxing moment. Yeah.
Almost. Foreshadowing.
Dun, dun,
anyway.
Dun,
dun, dun. Dun. And okay. So... So that's what you're making in robot class or in robot club. You're making mostly what I see now, which is a very, very spooky and confusing, is you can order a pizza in West Hollywood and an eyeball truck, tiny eyeball, like AT-AT will come at you.
I've seen that. Yeah, that. I haven't seen it in person. Wow.
I've seen it in person and I've tried to get out of the way because I'm like, I don't know. Is it armed? Mm. And
we have them on campus now too. And there was a bomb threat related to the delivery robot. Not to give the listeners any ideas. Don't do it.
No,
it's not a good idea. But if you do it at a robotics faculty meeting, you may all get an email that says, do not approach any robots. And you're like, wait, we got to leave.
I'm in the robot industry.
We're going home. We can't stay here today. So that was
the bomb scare was that someone put a bomb in like the pizza box that had legs.
In fact, they hadn't, but there was a post on an online.
They were faking it and they were just like, would it be funny?
What
and
if they did this? No,
it wouldn't be funny. Turns out.
So they had to search all the robots and check.
Oh my God. And the robots are like, this is what's that thing? Profiling? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And but what do, like, if you're making, because I know Bill Dwyer, stand-up comic from here in the Los Angeles area, used to host something called Battle Bots.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, I think they were remote control. You think they were remote control?
I think they were. I actually know at least one person who helped get that show started, but yeah, pretty intense.
Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen it in person. That's always
I've never
one.
Even seen it on TV. I was just happy for Bill Dwyer.
I've definitely seen some clips. Because folks from around the Robotics Network fed into that too. That's awesome.
Are they on board? Yeah.
They're on board or helped with the designing or wrangling people. That's never been quite my cup of tea. I'm more on like the soft human facing side of robots, not the attack robots.
Interesting. Have you seen Love and Robots, Love, Death and Robots on Netflix?
Yeah.
There was the robots that killed rats. And in the end, the two people, the rat and the guy, share a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of cool.
But, yeah, more like that, I guess.
Well, except for that a lot of rats died.
A lot of rats died.
And I believe his dog. So at the beginning of it, they were like, oh, try to keep pets away after it killed his dog.
Oh,
and you're
no.
like, boo. So the human side of robots, what does that mean?
So, as the delivery robots or other robots are appearing in our everyday environments, just like you're saying with the accidental dog killing robot, engineers are not always ahead of the curve on thinking about how their systems will interact with the world. And
shocking. Shocking about the social skills of people who've studied engineering.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. I love you all. But
thank you. You
measure twice and cut once.
You frightened me. Yeah. So, following that thread and watching people on my undergrad robotics team, I thought, people are not necessarily thinking about how humans interact with these systems. And I was curious about that. That's how I originally got on this sort of research thread, research direction. And I think. How do they interact?
Yeah. You're not taking found items and building a robot to my knowledge. Is that what you're not doing?
I usually say in my research group, if we can buy a robot that works for the job, we'll happily buy it. If we can't buy one, we'll make it. It's not a big obstacle, but it takes more time and energy.
Right. Because what you're doing is you're buying this robot that you bought for stand-up.
Right.
And you're repurposing it.
Mm-hmm. So for that one, the software is the big thing. Most of these systems, though, are sensing the world around them in some way. Crunching numbers, considering what they're seeing in some way, and then making decisions about what to do in some way. That's kind of the classic sense, think, act loop of robotics.
Okay.
And over time, we're seeing sense, think, act.
Yeah, I like that's, act. There we go.
Just like comedians, actually.
Just like people.
To some extent. Just like people. Right? Yeah, so like my robotic stand-up comedian reads the room, it listens to its surroundings, it scans people's faces and tries to decide, do you love this? Do you hate this? Do I need to work you a little or try to rebuild rapport if you hated something I said and are not on board anymore?
Is this like a 2.0? Have you built other robots that have interacted with humanity?
I've got a whole bunch of robots. So my research
group. You do?
Yeah.
And wait, do you ever repurpose them? Like take them apart and put them together in other ways? Or do you just, once it's done, you're like, buy Jim's going one. There. And there's Larry, and then there's John. Well,
let's see. Yeah. So here's a sad artifact. Let's see. We're still using them. Those cases on the wall are like 20 of the Anki Cosmo robots, which I love. It's a company that's gone out of business, you know, since I bought the first fleet. But they were a really fun little tabletop robot that could come up to you, raise the little forklift, look at you. Are you Googling it?
Yeah. How do you spell Anki? How am I spelling that?
It's A-N-K-I, and the robot is the Cosmo, C-O-Z-M-O.
Okay, let's see what comes up. The,
hopefully we got it.
Oh, they like little, like, they're like little tanks. They're like
forklift tanks.
Yeah, like a truck. Oh, yeah,
the head moves, the forklift moves, and they have tank driving. So just like a lot of action packed into a small tabletop form factor. Really
can that fun. Front thing move for up and down?
Yeah,
Yeah.
We can play with one. Let's see.
What? Oh. They're playable. Well, and so you can buy them over at the Best Buy. You should know that. Oh, this item is no longer available.
I don't think they're available anymore. I bought mine from like a reseller. You can see the degrees of freedom. Here we go.
The articulation. Very nice articulation.
The head moves. So yep. if you didn't buy this robot 7 years ago and have regrets, now you can write your sins, I guess. This is the most infomercial I've ever felt in my life.
And yet, the Dork Forest is full of people who are like, no, I have $100. Could I own a tiny robot that runs on the thing?
If you find them still available for $100, please let me know. I'd happily buy more.
Hello.
I love
somebody.
Them, so.
Would, you love them so. That is hilarious. What about did you fiddle with those? Like, did you adapt them?
Yeah, so those we actually set up to give people a little nudge if you were sitting and working on a computer for too long. So we're bad examples of this. I'm sure we're going to sit continuously for longer than a half hour, which is not advisable. Your eyes don't like it. Your skeleton doesn't like it. Your cardiovascular system doesn't like it. So we had the robot come over and give you like a little nudge to get up every 30 minutes
or so.
At least to stand, you could stretch or do whatever you like, but get up from your chair.
Just a very basic sort of, hey, man, did they talk? Do they talk or anything, or do they just deliver a message?
They could talk. In that effort, we were trying to go for like the pet metaphor. If you have pets at home, if listeners have pets, they'll come over. They'll give you a nudge to, you know,
make
better
to go
decisions.
Yeah. Are you going to finish that? Yeah.
Right. They have needs or they see what you need. So that kind of interaction was what we were going for there.
Okay. Do you have any pets? Your pets?
These are my pets. Yeah.
These are your pets. So the research was, did you find out that it was effective? Did anybody get up?
People did get up. Actually, we found people fell in like three groups. This probably doesn't surprise all the humans, logical humans listening. As an engineer, I had to figure it out from first principles, I guess. There was a group that was very compliant. As soon as they got a little reminder, they're like, oh, okay, I'm good, thank you. There was a group that was in the middle, so depending on their work state, if they were really trying to get something done, they didn't want to get up. Other times, if it was convenient, they were okay with it. And then there was the group that I had to tell my student not to call the obstinate group, but that's kind of what we saw. Right.
Really they don't want to be bossed, Naomi. Really? They don't want to be bossed. Not some by them, some robot.
some of them put the robot on the ground or like put it in a little box, like they could not be bothered, which
right,
makes some intuitive sense, but it was nice to see it in action, this like robot nudges for healthier behavior.
Right. It's interesting. We all have our phones, so it would be like if your health app every 30 minutes was like, are you still sitting down? Could you stand up and do something?
We were curious about that as a comparison point, too, because that's one of the classic questions. What if it was a computer or phone? We had a phone-like second condition for comparison, and we found, like, with the duration that we studied the system, the actual behavior change was about the same, but people enjoyed the breaks and the interaction a lot more with the robot. So there's more to be studied. Like, does it last over a long period of time? The novelty effect is like the classic Achilles heel of human-robot interaction. But if we can make it fresh enough that it's kind of like a pet-like interaction over time, there's a chance you take the breaks and you enjoy it too.
Right. And if you change the interaction, like how many different things can a robot do? Whatever the size of the computer that's in the robot, I imagine, right?
This one, they've cleverly networked it with, you know, offboard computing on a computer, on your phone. So
it helps like a Bluetooth kind of thing?
Yeah. So, you know, this robot, part of the clever design that Anki did for this one, and if you remember those like autonomous racing cars, I think that was their first product. You could buy these cars and they autonomously raced around a track with interaction with your phone.
Oh, okay.
Part of the reason for interacting with your phone is like remote control capabilities. But part of the reason is getting like extra computing power somewhere else, which we see a lot in these types of systems.
What's the extra computing for if it's not options? Is it options?
The Cosmo used like
you, because you said extra computing is off board. Yeah. I was like I don't actually know what that's for.
This one runs things like computer vision. Like, can I find the little block that comes with it? You know, find markers on it, go to lift it up. So things like computer vision, things beyond the, you know, base behaviors of the robot.
Right.
The computational cost of that gets pretty expensive pretty fast. So like fitting a microprocessor inside the robot that would be able to do that is tough. That's kind of where the putting it on a computer helps with the robot actually being able to do things.
Right. So what's the coolest robot? I mean, like that obviously, that one, like every new robot is the coolest robot, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes,
I'm
it
like,
is.
Oh, am I going to have to pick a favorite?
No.
I have a soft spot for a lot of the robots. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to pick a favorite. Tell me some of your favorites. I love it. It'd be like picking a favorite movie or song. I don't think it's possible. I think you could pick some that you really like.
Okay. Right? I do have one that's underappreciated. The Baxter robot. B-A-X.
Baxter.
Yeah. B-A-X-T-E-R. It was made by Rethink Robotics around the early 2010s. It's like a big red industrial robot, although it was designed to be used in sort of collaborative applications so people could grab an arm, like physically move it around, show it like an image of a bar of soap or whatever it's supposed to pick up. And through the physical interaction and training, then the robot could execute whatever ability you're trying to teach it.
That one?
Yeah, that one. It's pretty big and beefy, but if you ever
get a chance.
That
looks very powerful. And it looks kind of like it should work at a factory.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like because it has a person face, right?
It's true.
And yeah. So they gave it eyebrows, for God's sake. I barely have eyebrows. And
very person-like.
And very person-like. And this one looks a little angry at us, a little frustrated. Like, get off my lawn, you kids.
I did use it for my doctoral dissertation, so I have a special soft spot. But you're
for
right.
That one?
I also redesigned the faces for my purposes.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, you could probably find it if you Google, like, Naomi Fitter Baxter faces.
Right.
I took inspiration from the Nick Jr. face, and I used that as like an update of the Baxter face, which is a little more friendly, approachable.
Right. It's you. Well, here's a picture of you giving yourself a high five here.
That was part of the topic of my dissertation. Yeah, I did high-fiving robots with that specific robot. And part of what I love so much about it is that it's very compliant. So even though it looks like a big football player, like you said, this definitely belongs in a factory.
Right.
If you push it around while it's moving, it's actually one of the safest robots of that scale that I've ever interacted with. It whacked me like a good time or two at 4 a.m. when I was frantically writing code. And I'm still here to tell this tale.
Right. So what you could do, though, is you could start like a boxing, like it could like it could hold a boxing thing or those things where you do a roundhouse and kick it.
No, that's right. That's my PhD advisor in the last picture you showed.
Oh, is it?
She did some follow up work, so it might not be, you know, labeled with my name, but that's
it came up with your name.
Nice. That's the Max Planck Institute. We exactly did what you said. We needed like a friendlier to smack end effector. That's just the name for whatever you put at the end of, you know, the kinematic chain of a robot. Right. So I went to Walmart and got like boxing pads for, you know, boxing practice. Pop them right on there. Cheapest, easiest to make robot end effector for social physical interaction that I've made so far.
That's awesome. I like that. So why is it underappreciated, that robot?
Well, just like Anki and many robots I love, the business model just didn't pan out. I think you're highlighting the tension well, where it looks like it belongs in a factory, but the industrial sort of precision expected of robots, you lose some of that when you make the robot more springy. So that's kind of the eternal dilemma of Baxter.
Okay.
You hit the nail on the head. You're an expert roboticist.
Well, I don't know art. I just know what I like. I don't even know what that means. But the weird thing is that, so what is, like, because I think, from what I can tell, a robot company is only successful for a short amount of time.
So far, yeah, I think it's hard. I know.
Is there any robot company that you know of that's older, that is still in business, that is sort of cranking out new and interesting robots, or they kind of nailed the one robot everyone wants and needs?
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of Roombas, because I think iRobot has been doing it longer than a lot of companies, although their business model is like pretty specific to certain applications. Pause for garbage truck. I do have a Roomba at home, though, so if I had to pick my favorite robots, I think that's another one that would be in the mix.
I've never even seen a Roomba at work.
Oh, wow.
People swear by them. They're just like, it's better, but they don't get corners. Do they get corners? They're round.
They get corners. They have a little rotating brush on the side, so they can get the corners. One thing with the classic Roomba, so some of the newer ones have like the laser scanners that I was talking about using in my undergrad, and they're mapping a room and trying to, you know, use a more dedicated vacuuming pattern to clean it. The older style Roombas have just like one or maybe a few momentary contact switches on the front. So it drives around wantonly until it hits something, turns around, drives wantonly. And I really like that, but I think it's not for everybody.
Your favorite is when they just bump into things and go, oops, not this direction. And and then they go in a different direction. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Although I think their responses, their repartee with their environment could be better. We did an experiment recently in my lab about cursing robots. So if it could like run into something and say an expletive, I think that'd be a fun extra layer.
Sure. Sometimes I'm talking to Siri and Siri has something to say back. Mm-hmm. Like I usually say thank you just because I know that when they do become sentient, they'll remember the humans that were polite.
Brownie points while you still can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's early days. So, or is it? So I don't know. So Roomba is good. And now it has sort of the laser thing that can tell.
Yeah, some longevity. I think they played with other things like scrubbing the floors, not just vacuuming. They've got a line of products. But you're right that the particular domain, like household maintenance or household and yard maintenance, seems to be the focus. So it's tricky to break through with hardware. But I'm excited about the potential when we can.
Right. So your students, what are they, do they come in with a fair amount of science fiction in their brain boxes going, I want to make this, and when will we make this kind of thing?
That's a good question. Most of them come from undergraduate engineering degrees so far. So I think they know a little bit about like what you can and can't easily do with technology from those experiences.
Right. So you're not working with freshmen. You're not working with star-eyed 18-year-olds who are just like, I am going to make Will Smith's adversary or Blade Runner. And then I'm going to have to figure out if it's a person.
It's a good point. I do research with graduate students and undergraduates. But my kind of core of my research group is the grad students who are working with me, PhD and master's students. So I think they're a little more seasoned. We work with undergraduates too during the academic year, during the summer. And sometimes they may be a little more starry-eyed. But we try to, balance the broad creative open thinking with setting tangible targets and working them out.
Sure. And you're working from a place where, like, everyone always talks about sex robots. When will the sex robots
where
come?
And I was just like, robots?
Just go poke your penis into a hole. You don't need a robot. You have a fleshlight. That's not a robot.
It's
you want it attached to somebody that doesn't talk. Is that what you're looking for, sir and or madam? And But sex robots, I mean, they occur, right? Have you seen them? Have you ever seen a sex robot?
I haven't played with them before, but I think they're gaining some attention in the community. Like there were.
Why wouldn't they? Come on.
Why wouldn't they?
People love a dick joke. They love a sex talk. They love a thing. So
Oregon, though, is, I think, one of the leading producers of sex robots. I think there's a company an hour south of campus that's one of like the leaders, both for men and for women, if I remember right.
Like, interesting. So you have to climb on top of a giant vibrator and that's attached to a man looking robot?
don't quote me on this, but I think there's a company that's doing AI based, pleasure pattern generation with something that looks vibrator like, but that's a little more advanced, shiny.
What you're saying is that Baxter isn't working on it.
That's right.
So, so, I'm sure there's a fair amount of, well, that's not serious robot work. When there's people who are like, well, it's actually very serious because it's going to make a ton of money.
Business model. Actually, we work with a skilled nursing facility in some of our research, and they've thought about like sex robots and like incorporating sex workers into their operating model. So it's a real thing. Yeah. Not just general consumer interest, but maybe even like wellness as you age.
You need a grand idea. They might think about getting a couple of puppies and a kitten. That will also and entertain the elderly. I live with my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
The dogs and the cat she's on board. It's literally all she wants to, if someone were to offer her, and she's a gay lady, it would just be, please don't offer me another job.
You just don't want to, have a sex robot at home. I can tell that's the angle.
I just learned about vibrators several years ago. I never knew about them. I mean, I knew about them because I've been doing stand-up for 40 years, but I never owned one. And I was like, well, this is an excellent idea. I don't mind this. This seems to be able to beat at a pace that my hand.
Most men that I've met before.
And is certainly much better than any sort of handiwork that I was currently doing. So
excellent. We're very sex positive in Oregon, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, I'm coming, by the way. I'll be there at the end of June, opening for Maria at Helium, and I'll also be there back July 19th at the Siren. I'll be headlining, and Virginia Jones will be opening for me. So
that's amazing. Yeah,
make sure to come to the Siren. Everybody not that you're not going to want to see Maria, but don't you also want to see me do 45? Oh, that'd be great. There
they
go.
Both sound so amazing. Yeah.
Right. I'm going to. And you're in Corvallis, though. How far is that from Portland?
It's an hour and a half. So
Well, just wave as I fly
there.
Over.
I'll be there.
I don't know. No pressure. Lori would pressure you, but I'm
on doing board. Most likely I'll be doing a gig like in the basement of the same facility at the same time.
Right.
I'll have to check.
Hilarious. Okay. So I am, by the way, talking with Naomi Fitter. It's at Naughty But Nerdy on Instagram. She's going to be doing stand-up at the Crow here in Santa Monica at some point coming up. And
August 28th.
Thank you.
August
There's
28th.
The date. August 28th. You guys. And yeah. So let's talk. Yeah. Let's talk about the robot that you. So you bought a robot guy, and now you've written software, ones and zeros, to make him tell jokes, and his name is John, and he's 3 feet tall.
Yep.
And does he do short jokes?
He does shorter jokes. So anybody out there who sees it in the future.
I'm not talking about I'm not talking about one-liners. I'm talking about does he do like I've watched too many roasts of Kevin Hart and they just keep making fun of that man's height. Does he talk about his family? Most irritating question in stand-up?
What kind of comic does he do? That's great. I love it. No. So when I started writing for the robot, I tried to do like the comic joke, but from a robot perspective. So a lot of the beginning jokes are like, I'm John. I'm John. Of course, that's not my real name, but humans can't pronounce dial tone.
Oh, there you go. Oh, I see.
So, that's been told by a human with some perspective. Can we do it from the robot perspective?
Right. The fact that the robot would be like, you guys don't speak early 80s modem, do you?
That kind of thing.
Right.
There's one exactly like that. It says, here's one for all my robots. Modem noises ensue for about 30 seconds. Then there's some punchline or.
Right. I'm half vacuum cleaner and half jet, right? Like,
exactly.
That's at all.
Yeah.
It just means that I get there early, but I interfere with your life flow.
That's exactly right. Comic jokes of the 90s, but told from a robot perspective.
That's
one vein I've definitely mined. It seemed like a good place to get started.
It's an excellent place to get started, especially if you want to play with a robot.
Yeah.
And you do.
Yes.
You're like, me and my robot would like to do stand-up comedy. And I want my robot to do stand-up comedy. So the robot has to do robot jokes. So these are the first level of robot jokes are going to be the first level of robot jokes.
That's exactly right.
Are people psyched about it? Or are they just like, how did you do that? And you're like, well, it turns out I have a PhD in robotics. And I can write. Yeah.
So they seem to enjoy it. I try to present it as like proper stand-up comedy. So, do it before I do my seminar, pull away the curtain and talk a little more about what's under the hood. But yeah, they seem to enjoy it. I'd say when it performs on a show with me, for better or worse, it usually contends well with me and the other human comedians.
You also do stand-up, right? It's not just John.
Right.
So when you're writing for the robot, you write the joke and then you have to write the code so that the robot could tell the joke, correct?
I write the joke. Usually I write it in text and then I use text to speech, usually Amazon Polly, just because it works pretty smoothly right out of the box to get the robot to like pronounce it well in its own voice.
And then sort of like auto-generated captions, and then you go through and sort of fix the code that is given to you?
It's kind of like that, but the opposite direction. So I know what words it wants to say. Can I get it to say them well? Or it might be the same thing. I haven't fiddled with all the captioning.
Does he cuss? Is he clean? Is he a Christian comic? Could he do a dry bar?
He's pretty clean. The dirtiest joke is like kind of the closing joke of the performance where the robot talks
Everybody
about...
Everybody ends on a dick joke, yeah, you guys. Yeah. You got to end on the dirtiest joke you got.
The joke ends with, it's like a sped up dating conversation between this robot and, you know, a hypothetical date. And it ends with coming. So, you know, you got to end blue, lean in hard.
Second show gets super blue, you guys. Fluids. Does he talk? Is there any WD-40 jokes? You could do a WD-40 joke.
Not yet.
Let's do a little joke machine, Naomi.
joke machine on.
Because I want to write for the robot. I want the robot to get super, like, just, hey, you know. When I was just a pile of nuts and bolts, you guys,
that's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just, and then all of a sudden I'm in a box and I'm in America. And what I am is an illegal immigrant because was there paperwork? There was some customs. I went through customs. It's fine. I'm eligible for citizenship. Yep.
Pile of nuts and bolts. I had to take the assembly line all the way to school. Nowadays, you kids can walk. I don't know. I'm sure there's some grizzly.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff there. This is a rich vein, as Maria Bamford likes to say. It's a rich vein. And you go with it. So have you done it at, when you do it, because the robot is 3 feet tall, you have a box like you do for the Ankies, right?
Yeah, actually, I carry it around in a duffel bag, so it's a very interesting.
How does he breathe in there?
I know. It's very irresponsible.
Because he gets a little knocked up, a little nicked.
I started doing the robot comedy when I still lived in LA, 2017 to 18. And I just carry it along to like the Lyric Hyperion from my house, 26-minute trek. So it's just a lot easier to move around than a rolling case over the curbs of LA.
It
does feel very Godfather-y, like unzipping the duffel bag.
Like the horse head and revealing what. Okay, so
and then at the end,
you're doing
go to sweet prince. Yeah, zipping it up really feels like something.
It's sort of like puppetry, like the
ventriloquism
because you're writing the jokes and the robot is telling the jokes, so I mean, no one is expecting, and it's interesting, I think maybe having it be a man, if you identify as a woman, that then you're like, well, then they don't think that you've done the, I mean, it's sort of gives a plausible deniability that I think, you know.
You can play with it.
right. There's the ventriloquists do it with their voice, by throwing their voices and saying racist things that a puppet is saying.
I was just going to say, my robot's really racist, everybody. Not true.
Seems like, I mean, the thing is whenever there's a racist puppet in your ventriloquist act, you're like, you know that means you're racist, right?
You wrote that.
It's not me. The material that you choose to write, you know, it's sort of like starting to do stand-up again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
because you've been, how long have you been doing stand-up?
11 years.
And how long has John been doing stand-up?
We're like, Six years.
Time's ticking by.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Right, right.
Much, so, much greener.
Right. Well, I don't think he gets as much stage time probably as you do. And because it's easier to just take yourself to open mic than to take John to open mic. And
I used to haul it out a lot. But, you know, nowadays I'm like, you got to pay me. I have a rate for the robot.
We get a rate for the robot?
Steep rate for the robot. Or,
rate for the robot, everybody. Note to self.
Save
you
up.
Want the robot. Save
you want
up.
It for bat mitzvahs, you want it for weddings, yeah.
Right. I just need to tell you, just have you done, and this would be, I don't know if, I mean, if is this the right use of AI stand-up comedy?
Good question. Yeah. I've been told that Congress will not fund it. So,
oh, you think about do you write some grants to you? Do you write some
lots
a lot of
grants.
Grant writing in your in yeah. the in your current employment?
100%, yeah,
100% is what you're living on. And uh-huh. I understand. My sister used to write a lot of grants. Mm-hmm. She did a lot of nonprofit work, and eventually she said, "You know what? I think I'd rather be rich." And then be on a board. And I was like, yeah.
You have the choice? That's great. Yeah.
Right. And in my family, you do, because you just sort of, you might as well try. So our father's going to make fun of you in any case. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of worked out. I mean, she's not a gajillionaire, but it's all working out. She's fine.
Nice.
And yeah. And she's the Roosevelt Foundation, which is fancy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Sure. And so, right. But she does, she's like, I'd rather be wealthy and just give the money away and be on boards and then write grant proposals. And I was like, could you teach me how to write grant proposals? Because I think there's probably really good stand-up comedy grant proposals out there that you could probably get a pile of cash if I wanted to like go to Edinburgh and mm-hmm. Edinburgh and I don't know how to pronounce it. If I wanted to go to Scotland for a month.
Second way. I've been studying. I got Edinburgh? The Fringe Festival in my sights.
Oh, there you go. You got it in your sights. And you could write that grant proposal.
That's
and
right.
You and your robot could go up. I understand. You need to know this about Edinburgh. I understand this is true. I have never been. That it's uphill both ways. So you're kind of scared.
Sounds right. So I'll bring my Pelican case for that one. No duffel bag.
Right.
No duffel
right.
bag.
You might want to do some sort of backpack situation. A baby
yeah.
Bjorn for your,
maybe
for your
the
robot.
Hiking. There's some yeah. great hiking backpacks for babies. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
I like that. I like that you like that idea. So
who
what
needs
you,
barking? Just walk around with your baby in the hiking
just,
backpack.
Exactly.
Your baby well, robot.
Here's the thing is it would how much does he weigh, John?
It's kind of infant like weight, maybe 20
12?
pounds.
20?
Maybe a little less.
Okay. But 15 to 20 pounds?
I think that's right, yeah.
So if you barked with that robot on your back, you would, I think, get a lot. Oh, yeah. Show them the guns.
Oh, I thought you
guys go
like
to YouTube. You want to see the Naomi Fitter guns.
Check out the visual, everybody. They're getting better. They're getting better.
Yeah, getting stronger. Yeah, so I think that you would fill the room, is what I'm saying, is if you barked and flyered with the robot in some sort of toddler backpack.
That's
or a baby Bjorn
idea.
Where it's, but I would actually recommend a baby Bjorn in front
the
of
front.
You, mm-hmm. the front one, because then you could keep an eye on your gajillion dollar robot.
That's
and
fair.
No one could steal your robot off of your back. Not that the Scottish would do that. I don't believe that they would.
Really good street smarts. Yeah.
I was raised on the mean streets of a small factory town in rural Wisconsin, which is no longer rural and is now a suburb. Okay.
Oh.
That'll happen. So cool. I don't know if
robots.
Someone wanted to get into like if someone wanted to join a robot club.
Mm-hmm. What did
would
they
you
do?
Recommend it? Yeah,
I recommend
like if they
it.
Freaking love robots. Do you just hang out with friends ever? And I know it's your work and it's your
do
and
you
it's
robot stuff.
Yeah.
I'd say, so if you're younger, like, you know, K through 12 kids interested in robotics, there's some great competitions out there. Like the first competitions, first Lego League, Bot Ball, some more, you know, mainstream Lego Run, some more grassroots. That's a great way to get started because some of the fundamentals are going to be similar. You know, wherever you're getting started, play with hardware, write some code, really good. There are a lot of maker spaces that have cropped up, so that could be another place for like adults looking to get involved to start to learn more about robots. At least like most of them have 3D printers, which are robots in their own right, that All kind right. of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're
Do you have a 3D printer?
I do in my lab. I don't at home, but some okay. of my family members do. So we have some in the family, I guess.
I love the idea. Some of my family members do. No specifics. Do not talk about my aunt.
And we've got a ring, a 3D printing ring. Yeah.
There is a Dork Forest episode about 3D printing that is actually really, really cool.
Excellent.
And I believe it was, it's from lockdown. So mm-hmm. I don't know what episode. I can't remember the name of the man. He was very interesting, though, and I liked him a lot. Awesome. And he showed me, like, it was when I started videotaping. And mm-hmm. So if you Google Dork Forest 3D printer, you will find the episode, is what I'm saying.
Nice.
And
my youngest sibling definitely has a 3D printer. I just hedged because I don't know, you know, there could be other family members who have one.
Could be more, sure.
Don't want to restrict us. Don't want to limit it. Yeah.
That is hilarious. So the basics, when you first get into robots, it's all about the hardware and the coding. Is that right? Would you say?
Yeah, I'd say that's right. Usually the circuitry level is glazed over a little bit. Like you start with some, you know, buildable robot Lego kit or modules you can put together. But the circuitry part is important too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So are the three main parts are the hardware, the circuitry, and the software. And the software. Yeah. That makes sense. Are
then there the humans.
Any,
the humans.
Right. And then the people involved with the writing of the software and the vision of the creator, right? Sort of. Do you feel godlike?
Not usually, but maybe right. I should take my own
probably
more
for the
more.
Best.
Yeah.
Probably for the best if you don't go on some sort of weird.
That's part of why I got into this field, because I saw some like energy around me that seemed very lightly sociopathic. And I was like, I think I need to tie this to add the humanities layer here. Yeah.
Right. Good for you for trying to bring it back. Let's just try to bring it back into the community. Quit isolating. Mm-hmm. Let's bring the robots back into. It'll be great. And so when the robot uprising happens, do you guys talk about that? When the robot uprising?
Oh, we hate that. No. Although
you don't like that at all?
My closing joke for the robot is about it. He's like, if you liked me, please book me and help me take your jobs. So it's hard to avoid, but not a favorite.
So, right, because it's the one where you're just like, you're actually impinging on the entire industry.
Yeah.
And you're saying that we want to build just weapons and something to kill humanity. So
let's lean into it at least.
But there's always something in every job where you're just like, I don't want to talk about that. That's not the thing. That's not the fun thing that I get that I like out of this gig.
We can talk about it though. Advice for listeners, you know, pour water on them. Many robots don't like water.
Right. Know that you can't unplug them because they're battery operated, but water will always help, much like the witch in Wizard of Oz.
That's right. Yeah. And batteries, you know, they have a life, but they do drain over time. So
right,
if
just
the
keep
robot
fighting.
Uprising comes, hide for a duration and hope that they run out of battery. Another great tip.
Hide for a duration, you guys. Naomi Fitter. It's an hour. I say we're at like 57 minutes. I think it's great. This has been fascinating. And it's just going to start a flurry. I think that the Adler's going to be like,
we like robots. How come we never talked about robots? I'm like, everyone can talk about whatever they want to talk about. Do you have a robot telling jokes? I don't think you do. Anyway, Naomi Fitter does. At Naughty But Nerdy is the Instagram. And going to be at the Crow August 28th with the robot?
I think so, yeah. All right. I put it on the poster. I'll commit.
Okay, there you go.
With the robot.
Coming in hot from Oregon. So thank you so much for doing the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other. Anytime now.
Hiya, doll. How was the show?
I don't know if Patrick has to clean up that beginning, but there it is. Hello and welcome to the bonus part of the Dork Forest, where I talk to Andy Ashcraft. And get to have a little face-to-face while I'm on the road, too.
I think we should address where you are.
I'm in my brother's basement, or first floor, or whatever you call it. My brother, Russ, is Winnie the Pooh. He lives in the 100-acre wood.
He does. You're not in the folly. You're just in the ground floor.
No.
Of his,
Eric has decided to take over the folly. My sister-in-law is closing the door. There we go.
Oh, well, she's
now the privacy
of,
that we
had
need.
Enough of our nonsense, I guess.
The privacy we need to discuss Naomi Fitter's episode of The Dork Forest.
Oh, yes.
Where she talked about robots for an hour.
Robots? Real robots? Robots of fiction?
Oh, robots. Like she's a robot. Like she teaches robotics.
Oh, that's exciting.
At a university in Oregon.
That's
Corvallis,
neat.
Possibly? Portland?
Could be.
She's great. She's also a comic, and she bought a robot and has written software to make the robot do stand-up.
Excellent. That's what we're looking for.
The robot is one of the tiny robots, so it's only 3 feet tall. And I said, does your robot do short jokes? And she's like, he does. So it turns out her robot is a little hacky. But he's only been doing stand-up for a couple of years. So,
right. Early days.
Early days, the learning curve, even for robots.
That's awesome.
But she showed me several robots that she has collected, repurposed, turned into any number of tasks.
Repurposed them into other kinds of robots or into other things altogether?
Well, rewritten the software that goes in the robots. So she can build robots, but she's like, it's easier just to buy a robot.
Right. Yeah. You don't need, there's no reason for you to rebuild a servo unless you've got something specific, right?
Right. Though she did change the facial expressions. She went with sort of a Nick Jr. She told me.
And
like, you know, the Nick Jr. faces on their, very silly, very
What fun. Is it? What is Nick Jr.?
Nick Jr. is on Nickelodeon. They had a block of cartoons that were called Nick Jr. and they were toddler aimed cartoons.
Yeah.
And she liked the facial features on the cartoons that they used.
Okay.
So, but it was, I recorded three episodes this day and she was the first of them and it was awesome.
That's neat.
It was really fun to learn about robots. And she, by the way, not amused when I said the robots were going to take over. She said that is actually not something we talk about, and we actively work to make sure that the robots. You know what I did forget to ask her is if you write the code for the robot, does it have your personality?
Not necessarily personality, but it will get your biases.
Well, I suppose. I mean, if you think about Ultron and Iron Man.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the same problem that these AIs are having, right? Where
the programmers?
Like, yeah, the programmer they're just without even thinking about it, they're getting biased by the programmers because the programmer, like for example, I mean the big example is the facial recognition software. They see black people because none of the people programming it are black and they're just testing it on themselves to see if it works and it works. And so they never tested on anybody, but other white
fishbowl. Exactly.
Right. So that's the example of the kind of biases that are getting accidentally added.
Right.
Another example. Here's something weird, and this is tangential. You know, okay. I play the Wordle every day.
You play the Wordle.
I play the Wordle, and then I check and see what the Wordle bot thinks about my Wordle.
There's a Wordle bot?
There's a Wordle bot that you can sort of, that judges you on how well you have Wordled.
Oh my goodness. Because there's just not enough judgment. Yes.
Well, right. And it frequently infuriates me. But mostly what it's doing is it gives you a 99, like a 1 to 100 skill score for okay. each guess. And then it averages your skill guesses and gives you an average, you know, like the average of your guesses as a skill okay. score. It bases its skill, like it's the guesses that its judgment is how much like me do you do this?
Oh, okay. So like the AI.
Right. And so basically there's some programmer who's decided that the best way to solve Wordle programmatically is this specific way, and now is judging everybody else's Wordles based
right,
on
so it's their yardstick.
Right. So I often, not frequently, but often solve it faster than the Wordle bot does.
Okay.
So it'll show me my guesses next to the Wordle bot guesses, and frequently I'll do it in 3 when it does it in 4, or I'll do it in 4 when it does it in 5. And then it'll give me a bad score.
What?
Because I got too lucky.
Oh, and they call it luck.
Yes, it gives me there's a skill rating for each one and a luck rating for each one.
That's like telling me I get away with speeding when cops pull me over because I'm a woman.
Right.
And it makes me want to poke somebody in the nose.
That's right.
Anybody.
Right.
But it's a great episode about robots with Naomi
Fetter. Yes. Yeah, that sounds great. And we weeded off into a tangent, and I apologize.
We did. Naomi Witter, by the way. It's at Naughty But Nerdy. Is her
Naughty
Instagram handle.
Okay.
And good for her, I say.
I can't wait to hear her robot sets.
Robot jokes. Oh yeah. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?